Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show! Hey everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Birchie. We got a real special show today. Never had all three of them on at once. Always meant to. Never got around to it. So what better way to do that than with an all-Twitter question show? It is the hosts of the Anime World Order podcast, returning champion Daryl Surratt. Daryl, thanks for coming on.
Always glad to be here, Zach.
And other returning champion, Gerald Rathgub. Hey, Gerald.
Hey, great to be back.
And haven't had her on since 2009... But it's Clarissa Grafeo. Hey, Clarissa.
Hey.
Okay. Well, guys, we've never had all three on at once, and I thought it would be fun to just take questions from the audience and see where it goes. But before we get to that, and we got a lot of questions to get through, I'm curious, like, you know, everybody always complains about the, irregular update schedule of Anime World Order, and I'm curious, what can people maybe look forward to? Like, how's it been going, first of all, and what can maybe people look forward to in the next month or two?
Silent crickets chirping is the answer.
No, I've got a couple of reviews planned as well. Largely, it comes down to if we watch something and we feel passionately enough about it to want to edit that damn podcast. Mm-hmm. So...
Right.
Yeah, it's not a very entertaining podcast to say, I watched this, it was okay, I guess. But yeah. I watched it.
Like, I recently watched Cyborg 009, felt passionately about it and enough to edit about it.
The new movie, to be clear.
009, yeah, re-Cyborg 009, or whatever the hell they want to call it.
Right.
So. I've got some manga reviews coming up to justify the fact that we do get review copies from Vertical, so look forward to those. I've got some Jose and some Seinen coming your way.
Yeah. I think we should do Wolf Children. That was an interesting movie, too.
Never heard of it.
Okay. So, in other words, you'll still be producing episodes, but who knows when they'll actually show up.
Yeah, we don't have a firm schedule, but we do have some stuff planned for eventually.
Yeah, I think when we were killing ourselves and doing the show weekly back when we first started it, it was not very fun to do because you just can't have a job, like a regular day job, and record that level of a podcast constantly.
Right. Yeah, if we could make the episodes shorter or just record, quote, live to tape, but we have to rely on the power of post-production to make ourselves sound erudite.
Yeah, and we didn't actually notice a big change in our listener base, and so we'd rather put out good episodes rather than a lot.
Because, you know, weekly podcasts, fuck those guys.
Well, it is different when you can sit down at your day job and
between 9 to 5.
Right, yeah. Like I'm doing right now.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah, no, I'm just kidding around. excellent. So, also, Daryl, if you wanted to plug anything from Otaku USA, now's your chance.
Sure. It is, in fact, my deadlines week. So I am currently like writing like 6 articles that are all due like at the end of this week. So in addition to that, we did just put up the best of 2013, sort of a vox populi amongst most of our contributors. That's on the website at otakuusamagazine.com. And a lot of the contributors to it are people who you may recognize from the Anime News Network reviews and columns and things. You know, we've got Dave from Astro Toy. I know Jason and Shannon do our manga reviews, go on down the list.
Okay. Excellent. So the idea here, this is just a Twitter show. I figured what better way to just engage the three of you than to just take questions from the audience. So we got a ton of them, and let's just dig right in here. all right. Christina, we got a few like this. We'll just throw them out right at the beginning here. Christina, Chibi UFO asks... any disappointments from the fall or winter seasons of anime?
Well, I guess is the winter season what's currently airing right now?
Yes, winter's current. I know the three of you don't necessarily keep up.
That's not actually true. I do keep up, and I watch shows every season. It's more just I'm writing about those for the magazine, and so right. I try not to talk about them online because the second I do, I'll get bombarded either with people who have read the source material and know more than I do, or some, you know, right. You know how it is.
Right, yeah. And they tell you everything, and they go, well, didn't you know later on and this and this happens? You're like, well, I was trying to enjoy that show.
happens too often. Disappointments?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if there's really anything I can think of that I watched and I was like, ugh.
Yeah, I think that anime does a good job of at least displaying in their advertising art whether or not this is something at least worth approaching.
Right.
So, I don't know.
Basically, you judge a book by its cover. You look at the art and the promotional images and what characters and things are in the trailer, and you're like, oh, I don't need to watch this, or, oh, I should watch this.
I mean, I've been pleasantly surprised by a few shows, actually.
Of course. There's always exceptions.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that, we're watching Miss Monochrome, and that show is, it's fluff. It's totally fluff, but it is very, very fun fluff, and it's genuinely funny at times. But the other stuff, you know, the stuff that we're watching is kind of stuff that I thought, this will probably be good, and it kind of has been, so.
I think there was one time where I allowed myself to let my guard down. I should have known better, but... I was, in fact, let down because for a glimmer of a moment, I thought that the second time would be the charm and that this new Loop on the Third versus Detective Conan movie would be good. And I was wrong. They BS'd me again, like how they BS'd me the first time.
Do they add, some sci-fi crap to it this time, or is it just plain bad?
Well, the fundamental problem of these things, it's like versus so-and-so. It suggests that these people are going to be at odds with one another. And the first Lupin versus Detective Conan, they have nothing to do with each other. They may be on screen for like 30 seconds as one of them's buying like a soda from a vending machine. And the second one, the trailer made it seem like, oh, okay, they're actually going to be like trying to thwart one another. And it was just a lot more mediocrity. I think I'm just, you know, really wishing that they'd be a little more ambitious with Lupin, especially since Fujiko Mine came out.
Right.
Yeah, and I like that a lot, so maybe they need to get Sai Yamamoto on it.
Well, she's got her own gig right now, so...
Space Dandy, yeah.
And what's your takes on Space Dandy? I mean, we've had about a couple episodes in. What do you guys think about it?
Well, hang on. We got a question about that coming up.
Oh, okay.
So we'll get to it. Don't worry. We'll get to it. I'm curious about that myself. but that begs the next question from Redneck Otaku. What's the best thing from the winter, from specifically the winter anime season?
Just from winter, I'd say...
They're still going on now.
Yeah, right now.
Right.
Maybe the thing you think has the most potential.
I mean, I still really like Kill la Kill. It's the show that I possibly look forward to the most every week. I mean, it is the direction it's going in. I don't know. I can't actually figure out how it got there from the last couple of episodes, but I'm enjoying it greatly. I don't know. It feels like it's got some sort of like Gren Lagann-esque build to it.
What?
I wonder why that would be.
No.
Yeah. Same people. So I'm very curious then where it will end up, because Gren Lagann ended up, you know, as about as large as a show can get. So yeah.
Yeah. We'll see if they're chucking galaxies at one another.
I wouldn't be surprised if it happens.
Did you have a different pick, Larissa?
I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of trying to decide. Like, I am enjoying Kill la Kill a lot. Like, I think I still kind of go back and forth a lot on Samurai Flamenco.
Oh, that's such an entertaining show. It is.
It is. It's so entertaining. But
it is so tremendously cheap. And, but
right.
And do you think it would be a thing where if you saw it on home video where they fixed all the animation errors, would it still be good? Or do you want like the Gundam Musashi experience?
I don't think it's that actually quality. Like,
yeah, I think
it's a lot of off-model stuff, but it's not that level of terrible animation.
Yeah, I think the appeal of the show is that it feels like they're just making shit up as the show goes on, but it still manages to be very entertaining. And
yeah, I can't actually tell if they've planned this or if they really are just sort of like, all right, what do we do this week?
Yeah. So, I mean, if you watch the first episode of it and watch, you know, where they are now, there is no way you would figure out how they got there. And it literally happens like in like 5 minutes, like suddenly, oh, let's introduce this entire like weird outlandish element.
Yeah, it's the Rocky and Bullwinkle approach to writing.
Yeah, I could not have predicted that the stuff that's going on now would happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, in addition to those two, both of which I like, I am still like watching, and this show gets no discussion online, but Hajime no Ippo, Rising, is still
like, catch up on that.
It's awesome. I mean, I've been watching Ippo for like 14 years now, yeah. And it's still good. I know some people who've like read way, way further ahead in the manga are starting to get like a little tired of some of its conventions, but I just think that show's super dope, and it's unfortunate that more people aren't watching it, but I can understand why. Mm. How are you going to actually get caught up on it?
Yeah, that is an enormous like barrier to entry sort of show, because I mean, you can't just start that season. You have to have seen the previous show, which is now only available in out-of-print DVDs.
Right.
And the season after that, which was never licensed.
Yeah.
So how on earth is anyone supposed to watch it?
It's unfortunate, but
yeah.
It is a show that is pretty easy to understand. This guy's going to punch that guy, and there's probably going to be like a giant, massive concussive blast force of wind. And it's pretty satisfying if you like fighting cartoons, as I do.
Yeah, I hope that it gets... I hope that the whole show manages to get streaming somewhere so everybody can watch it, because it's a little bit difficult to say you should buy the show. It's so long.
I think that's right. I think that was also a question we might have got at some point later on too.
Unless maybe in like, you know, really well priced thin packs or something. But even
I don't think anybody's gonna pick that up for a commercial release, like a physical release.
Oh yeah,
but
right.
I wouldn't be surprised if you saw the whole thing get dumped onto Crunchyroll at some point.
Yeah, that would be just perfect.
That would be the ideal.
Yeah.
I don't think man is meant to go and buy these 100 episode shows.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that's why I want to see like Yurusai Yatsura get that sort of treatment, because I mean, how on earth is anyone like ever supposed to see like that show?
Well, you don't ever want to watch the whole thing of Lum. I mean,
yeah, you watch that 78 episodes by Mamoru Oshii, and then the 6 movies, and then the 10 or however many OAVs there were,
and those are,
and then you've only watched half.
Yep.
Okay. Unit 05 asks, "What's the most difficult part of maintaining a regular podcast?" I'll answer this. I'll answer this question. Because my experience is obviously different from yours. This will be the 179th episode of AnCast, and right now the difficulty is finding people to interview that we haven't interviewed a million times, and coming up with repeatable format shows that we don't wind up going back to every single month. It's just coming up with content is tough. After 180 episodes, you know, this is a tiny little industry, and we're only interviewing people who speak English. So it's that's the hardest part, and it's a struggle, and that's why, you know, we take hiatuses and take weeks off, and that is the hardest part, is coming up with content just to fill it out every week. I still love doing it. You know, I don't have any plans or intention to slow down or stop anytime soon. But that's the hardest part. Daryl, you want to talk about, you know, from your perspective?
Sure. It sounds like the hardest part for you guys is pre-production. The hardest part for us is post-production.
Yeah.
In our sense, our shows tend to run kind of long, and we have to edit them. And I am kind of like this stickler for, like, weird perfection. I have to, like, edit out as many of the crutch words and pops and all that stuff to make it seem...
I think we all are the same on that, and so... We probably make it more difficult for ourselves than we should.
Well, you know, I feel that in some way, intangibly, that level of craft would somehow show up in the final product, which basically probably ends up sounding like we just cut each other off constantly because we're doing multiple edits to make it so it's not CNN Crossfire level of crosstalk. But yeah, that's generally speaking, we can record something in, you know, hour and a half, whatever it may be, but it may take days to edit. That's the hard part for us.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, when we were doing it regularly, it was insane because we would record on, I think back then we would record on Thursday or something. Friday was our day off. You know, you have Saturday to edit, Sunday you get it up, Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday you have a chance to watch the thing you're going to review on Thursday. And that was just, you just can't keep that up. At least not when you have a regular job. So
right, and then once I was, you know, and once I started having a day job plus doing grad school, you know,
should actually talk about what your grad work is about, because it might be interesting to people here.
So I'm hoping to finish up my master's thesis this semester, and basically, I've done a little bit of work. I work with a professor who is it's kind of interesting. So she is a Victorianist, generally speaking, but does a lot of work with neo-Victorian material. So basically either, you know, modern works that are representing the Victorian era or, you know, adaptations, modern adaptations of Victorian texts, you know, like new Sherlock Holmes adaptations and things like that. And she got into anime and manga, so she's branching out and doing that. So I've done some coursework with her, and I'm doing my thesis work with her right now. And what I'm doing basically is an overview of the of anime and manga that focus on representing otaku and fujoshi. So it's sort of like examining, say, the cultural and academic discourses and work about those groups, and then saying, okay, here's how this lines up or doesn't line up or interacts with the way these people are actually represented in the media that they or that people outside of their group consume. So right now I am doing revisions, which sucks.
But yeah, you're officially a geek media guru, or you will be. The Doctor of Nerds.
It's not a doctorate, just a master's.
The Master of Nerds. The Master of Nerds. My mistake.
Isn't there a show on TBS? Anyway.
Did you say it go on TBS?
I said, isn't that a show on TBS?
Oh.
If anybody wants to offer me a deal, I will make that show.
Okay. Well, that's cool. I mean, you know, I'm sure we'll hear about it once you get through that master's program and publish a thesis and all that.
Then I'm sure, you know, everyone on the internet will have a field day picking it apart.
Well, the trick is to not put it on the internet.
Yes.
All right. Stringed Sonata asks, if getting anime on TV is no longer relevant for getting new people into anime, what methods should potentially be pursued?
I think I kind of reject the fundamental premise of that. I think getting things on TV does still matter a lot.
Yeah.
Just not as much. Mm-hmm. The fact of the matter is you can put things online and it can get popular online, but people have to go out and find it. The thing about TV is that it can come to you. Mm-hmm. A lot of people just leave the TV on and just go about doing things or channel surf or what have you.
Right.
And that's how they can find weird stuff that they've never seen before.
Yeah, I think that the kicker is that there hasn't been a lot of anime on in the after-school time slot. At least not as far as I know. And right now, a lot of the anime on TV is just late at night for an audience that already knows it exists.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing with the online is that, you know, that's great if you already know that it exists and you already know where to go to look for it. It's like if you already know about Crunchyroll, but if you don't, then, you know, how do you find out about those shows?
I go to anime cons where people don't know about Crunchyroll.
Yeah.
Really?
I've multiple ones.
I mean, I know, like, the last con I went to, like, even as recently as last year, Attack on Titan was huge. And lots of people didn't know that it was a Crunchyroll simulcast.
Mm. The thing is, most people type in, like, anime, like, online in Google, and then all of these, like, Russian, you know, I don't know what to call
them,
but those pirate stream sites pop up. And that's where people are going. And
so what methods should we potentially be pursuing, or not we, but, you know, anime potentially be pursuing for getting new people into anime?
Maybe advertising where they are located. I know that advertising is incredibly expensive.
Well, I think also just, you know, get more coverage, because I see a lot of, like, there's obviously a lot of people who enjoy anime and manga and who also enjoy other things, because we see it all the time with, you know, Doctor Who and all this other stuff at the anime cons. But I don't see that too much going in the other direction. And I think that if somehow we could make that go the other direction, and so, you know, the much larger even just geek or nerd oriented podcasts and sites and, you know, video blogs that are talking about all of this other stuff, if there was more cross promotion, maybe if we were seeing anime and manga on there, I think, you know, that would get out to a reasonably large audience of people who would potentially be interested.
But, yeah, I think you're definitely hit it right on the money there. I think the more anime gets put onto those general pan-geek coverage sorts of places, mm-hmm. without being slotted into the anime tab or the anime section, that way, like, everyone sort of sees it alongside the news about the new Marvel movie or the new BBC sci-fi show or what have you, that's kind of what would keep anime visible and make people more curious, I think, in the modern era.
Right.
Because people
and what
are
I see,
on the internet.
Yeah, because what I see, like, for example, Attack on Titan, people I see are getting into that maybe that don't necessarily watch a lot of anime because, you know, there's people on Tumblr who are in other fandoms, people who are in Sherlock fandom or, mm-hmm. You know, Teen Wolf or Supernatural or whatever, and they're also posting about Attack on Titan. So people from those other fandoms are seeing it. And I saw it happen too, I mean, back in Harry Potter fandom. I knew a lot of people who got into either specific shows or into anime in general because people that were in Harry Potter fandom were also talking about that, and so that's how they found it.
The cross-pollination. I was actually fascinated to see that the Attack on Titan merchandise is being sold in Hot Topic, even though the show hasn't been released yet. But yeah, I mean, being on Netflix certainly helps a lot as well. But it's just, it ties back in, where are all the eyeballs? People are watching their entertainment. They're watching Netflix. So it helps more to have anime there, and I think we'll probably have another question related to that. So yeah, it's the cross-pollination of geekdom is the way to sort of get people into anime, and it has to kind of flow in the opposite direction because we've certainly got lots of anime fans who've diversified into all these other things. Now we need those people who are into other things to potentially start taking a look at anime.
Well, I just want to point out the Attack on Titan being on Netflix thing is kind of a bigger deal than I think we're sort of making it out to be.
It is.
That is where anyone in college or younger watches things.
Yeah.
There's a phenomenon where if it's not on Netflix or even on like Amazon Prime, but chiefly if it's not on Netflix, they don't watch it.
Yeah, it's too much trouble.
So Attack on Titan not only being on Netflix subtitled, which is a blow to it, like it needs the dub, but that'll happen eventually. That show being on Netflix, you know, the odds are, and it surfaces on the front page. Like, I don't watch anime on Netflix. I watch it on Crunchyroll and on the Funimation player and that stuff, because I have to for my job. But, you know, when I watch Netflix, I watch their original shows and documentaries and stuff. But Attack on Titan surfaces for me on the front page of Netflix. I open it up, and it's there under recently added, new releases, animation. And those images from Attack on Titan, that show was such a huge hit and such a phenomenon, and it continues to be so, that show being a massive hit before it was on Netflix, people will see that and say, hey, wait a minute, that's that Titan thing I've heard about. Because odds are if they spent any time on the internet and they're a nerd, they will have seen something from that show, even if they don't know what it is. Even if they're like, this is some anime thing, I don't know what that is. They'll still see it, and maybe they'll click on it on Netflix. And I'm really curious to know what the viewership numbers for it on Netflix are. Netflix is notoriously incredibly close to the chest with that stuff. They do not release viewer numbers unless they're bragging. You know, so they'll say like, oh, 4 million people, 8 million people watched House of Cards or whatever, but they don't release viewership numbers otherwise. So, you know, odds are we'll ever see those numbers, probably zero. But that being on there is a huge thing. And I think the biggest thing for anime is we need hit shows, big hit shows that are accessible to a broad audience where it's not just fake girlfriend stuff. And I know this is going to sound like yet another rant against the moe culture or whatever. That stuff is just not accessible to a large Western audience. It just isn't. So you need something like Attack on Titan, and now we have another hit with Space Dandy. That show is a hit. No matter how you slice it, it's a success. So
I've heard one response to that. Whenever I bring that up, a response I often get is, why? Why do we have to focus on the U.S.? Why can't they just focus on Japan and Asia? And the answer I always give is, well, look at the population of Japan and the rate at which they're aging and dying out relative to the rest of the world. I think for anime to crazy sustain script. Itself, you need to bring in new fans, and the place where the new fans are going to be is kind of internationally relative to Japan. That's my take on it.
I don't know that I would. To me, that sounds like a crazy extrapolation, but
I'm a crazy person.
But I don't necessarily think they need to be producing more stuff for the West. I don't care who it's aimed at. We need hit shows.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be more stuff for the West. It needs to be stuff for general.
Titan is designed to appeal to Westerners, but it's
designed to appeal to non-otaku.
Yeah.
It's not just a pile of stuff that sells body pillows.
I mean, I think that the most important thing is just getting it out there, gets fresh blood into the industry in some way, either through just people getting into the industry again or getting foreign companies to invest money in projects to be made. I mean, I would love to see, you know, it get for the popularity to rise again, and maybe, I don't know, I'm extrapolating this out crazily, but like Sony to say, hey, that Red Line thing looked pretty good. Can we, you know, maybe co-produce something that looks like that?
I mean, were there sales numbers given out for like the Marvel tie-in stuff that Madhouse did and like the Mass Effect anime and stuff like that?
The shows weren't really all that hot, but on the other hand, I do see them being sold in Walmart. And Walmart doesn't really they're not really in the practice of stocking things that don't move.
You can buy those in any grocery store kiosk. It doesn't mean that they're huge sellers or big successes. They certainly didn't seem to make much of a cultural impact. You don't hear anyone talking about them at all, ever.
Were pretty disappointing.
Well, maybe there were things that were super popular outside of like the anime fandom. And I don't know, kind of like, I don't know, Afro Samurai, which didn't do much in anime fandom, but outside of it.
It's a huge show.
It was a huge show outside of it.
I pay enough attention. I think most of us probably pay enough attention to the nerd culture outside of anime fandom to have understood whether or not those shows made any kind of impact.
Yeah, I mean, I saw very little about the Mass Effect thing, even on video game.
No, they didn't care.
It needs to be better.
Yeah.
They need to treat these things like they're big deals as opposed to farm them out to their guy who's never directed something because it's something that Japan specifically doesn't care about.
Yeah.
If they were to, say, make – I'm just throwing out a name here. But let's say if they made like Assassin's Creed the anime. Okay, there are millions and millions and millions of people who are into those games for reasons I can't understand. But, you know, if they would have to make something that was, like, as good as the source material, and I think Japan just is like, this is some weird whatever thing. It doesn't need to look as good or be as tightly, you know, directed or what have you. And that's a fatal flaw that needs correction.
Yeah, those shows, the chief problem with them is that they weren't very good. And so, you know, the quality is still king. It still matters that the show is good and compelling and people want to watch it. And from what I understand, from what I understand, the Marvel stuff was mostly people saying, it's not that bad, which is not, that's not going to make
good
a good show.
Not even that Iron Man 3 comes out, which makes, you know, over $1 billion and is mostly loved except by some hardcore nerds. And then you come out with the cartoon, which is like not even in the same ballpark of quality as far as anything.
It also doesn't help that, and I know that this wasn't, you know, Funimation's fault or anything, but that the timing was so off on Mass Effect. Like, didn't they release that thing like months after
people came out with the third game and the whole Mass Effect people revolted?
Like, shouldn't that thing have been there on the shelf as the game, like a week before the game came out or something?
Yes, it should have. And I asked them about that several times, and every single time they said, "Well, it would have been nice to have it out then."
Yeah,
so,
I understand
these are production issues;
these
are decisions being made. Like that, they also put it on shelves the week after Christmas.
Yeah,
the week after Christmas, after Mass Effect 3, which came out in the spring. So, you know, the timing was not good on that one.
Yeah.
Dragon Age is the same way. Dragon Age came out like a year or two after Dragon Age 2. those were not – the timing on those was real bad in order for them to be hits. But anyway. Okay. Some dumb questions here. String of Sonata wants to know who would win in a fight, MD Geist or Zaizen Jotaro.
Oh, boy. Zaizen Jotaro. That's a name I have not heard in a while. I feel like – I feel like now in this world of, you know, the NSA being exposed, that maybe there's some people who want to see some zero-budget animation about a guy exposing government crime through the power of infinite money.
Yeah, infinite money kind of wins.
Yep, just ask Batman.
Okay, next one. Silver Husky wants to know who would win in a fight.
Another who would win this fight.
Mad Bull 34 Sleepy versus Mike Hagar.
Mike Hagar is one of those things for which the following of that character is almost uniquely American. Like, I don't really see the Japanese in general going super ballistic over how awesome Mike Hagar is. But here, I guess there's just something appealing to the notion of like a big muscular Freddie Mercury who's the mayor that decides to take the law into his own hands, grab a lead pipe, and teach these punks a lesson for kidnapping his daughter.
I think
Japan never really seemed to go as super-duper into Mike Hagar as people in America.
I think the question is fundamentally flawed, because I think Sleepy is just Mike Hagar 10 years prior.
You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Mustache.
Yep. So it's a fundamentally flawed question.
Well, say like there's a time machine. All right. .04 asks, favorite animated films outside of anime? Let's start with Gerald.
Oh, well.
Frozen, I know, is a big one for you. You love that movie.
Oh, sorry?
Frozen. Frozen is your favorite.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Loved that movie. Oh, man. I mean, I was one of like two people in the theater who saw this, but I really loved The Iron Giant. I think it's a crime that more people didn't see that.
Well, now it's beloved by all, so.
Is it? Okay.
Oh, yeah, it's because of Brad Bird, and now Brad Bird's the man.
Okay, that's good. I'm glad it got some sort of thing there. I don't know. I stuff coming to mind, I really do like Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
It's a great movie.
I really like it. I'm betting that the Lego movie is going to be good because it's the same people.
Yeah, it's a shame about the sequel to Cloudy. It was terrible.
Yeah. Was it? Yeah.
Definitely not written or directed by the same people. It was sort of just like a cash-in sort of movie.
Yeah, that is a big shame.
But yeah, you're stealing all my good answers. I mean, I was going to say like, that I was partial to WB Animation. I mean, you know, Iron Giant is theirs. The Lego movie is going to be theirs. I'm a big fan of Mask of the Phantasm.
That's a great movie. One of the best Batman things ever made, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of that Warner Brothers animation stuff, including the DC things, are, you know, things I enjoy quite a bit. I find them a lot more easy to get into than the comics that they are derived from.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Paul Dini, like, for the DC stuff, just really has it down.
I think he actually understands what it is people like about their characters, and somehow the people actually running DC Publishing don't seem to get it.
Yep. I guess.
Are you into the Alan Menken musical cartoons?
I mean, I do like a lot of the Disney stuff. Overall, long term, I think. Well, I suppose you could argue that that based on the animation staff, but The Last Unicorn is still always one of my favorite movies. I really enjoyed The Secret of Kells.
That was
a good movie.
Yeah. I liked it a lot.
Absolutely gorgeous. And I think they're doing a new
studio is doing something, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to checking that out. But
I also know that, you know, you're a Pegasister.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I haven't been liking most of the stuff, and I refuse to watch Equestria Girls.
You also don't own a Trilby.
No, I don't. Gerald does, though.
I don't own it.
Does.
It was given to me. Therefore, I guess I own it, but I've never worn one. So,
but yeah, you also guys are you're into that French cartoon, a Wakfu?
Yeah,
I like it, but it is very. It's if it weren't as beautiful looking and beautifully designed, I think it would probably fall a bit more average for me.
It's based off of a video game, right?
Yeah,
and it feels like it. Yeah.
Right. Other things like more recent. I was really surprised. I really enjoyed Rango.
Oh, that movie was awesome.
That was great.
Not what I expected it to be at all.
Mm-hmm.
But in a good way.
Okay.
And, yeah.
And Daryl.
Well, again, a lot of my stuff got stolen, so I guess to go a little into the more current things as far as television animation, I think Cartoon Network's kind of having a renaissance right now these last few years as far as original programming. A lot of people are into Steven Universe. A lot of people are into, you know, the Clone Wars, which just got, you know, due to the acquisitions, I guess they're coming out with a new show. I was definitely into that. Transformers, also certainly an interest of mine, though I really have a hard time watching some of that stuff nowadays. Just, but yeah, I can't deny how that was something that I was immensely invested in back when I was a kid. And even the current show Transformers Prime is, it has its moments. I do wish it was better. But as far as styles of animation, I'm definitely an old man, so I like stuff from the 80s and 90s, which is hard to believe is like 30 years ago now.
Yeah. Gotta say, Steven Universe is great. That's a really good show.
Yeah. Including television, you know, I really enjoyed Gravity Falls. And good show. And of course, it, you know, it didn't get renewed, but I thought Motor City was really great.
Yeah, oh, yeah. And Tron Legacy. I mean, excellent, not Tron Legacy. Tron Uprising is also really good and also similarly, you know, discontinued a little too early.
I just wish that those animated shows had a easier to follow, like, release schedule. I mean, Gravity Falls had, like...
I don't know what's going on with it.
Gravity Falls season was, like, 14 months long or something, and it was just released kind of like once in a while.
Yeah, there'd be these long gaps between new episodes.
Yeah. I mean, I guess that's just how animation for kids goes or works. I don't know.
You know, we DVR Adventure Time, and it seems like a new season ends and then there's a new season that starts a month later that lasts for 8 months, and then that ends and then a new season starts 2 months later, and then that's 9 months long. Like, I'm confused by the production around that, but I just ignore it until there's a new episode on the DVR. Like, I guess that's sort of how I keep track of that stuff. But I wanted to go back to Steven Universe for just a second. If you're an anime fan and you've got an open mind about the kinds of animation that you will watch, I would recommend checking that out, just because it draws very heavily. It's a very clever sort of riff on Sailor Moon, and it's also very funny and heartwarming and nicely animated for the most part. There's been some bad animation in some episodes, but voice acting's really good too. Like, I kind of can't recommend that one enough. Like, I think it's really, really solid for a kid's show, and it's only 15 minutes per episode, so it's not much of a time investment. So I would check that out.
Yeah, I like it a lot. We have some friends who work on it, and they're some of the writers on it, and it's they've always done really, really solid stuff.
And also, just one last one as far as you know, current non-anime things. I think
Wreck-It Ralph.
I was going to say just the general I like that movie, but the general output of Titmouse is pretty solid. Mm-hmm. I mean, they made Motor City, Black Dynamite, you know, lots of great stuff. And there's very few things I can think of that they made that I have not enjoyed.
All right, my favorite animated movies outside of anime. I mean, Ratatouille's in my top five movies, not just animated, like my top five films of all time. Personal favorite. But yeah, I mean, everybody knows I'm a big Disney guy. I like all that stuff. And Fantasia remains, I think, my favorite of their oeuvre.
Just think of Fantasia 2000.
Yeah, fuck that. That is like, that has like one good segment in it. It is sort of a thudding, like, just for kids sort of version of Fantasia that is mostly like corny celebrity interviews and then really super obvious, like, look, it's Rhapsody in Blue and it's gonna look like Don Hirschfeld, and you're like, okay. it's mostly no good, but you know, good for Roy Disney, I guess, trying to put that together. But the best thing to come out of that was that Salvador Dali Walt Disney short that he finished, Destino. That was sort of part of that whole project, and eventually didn't get finished for it, but got finished later. And that's a great piece of animation legacy and history, and it's also beautiful. I consider myself to be just a fan of animation in general, so I try to watch just about everything that comes out. Too much to name, I guess. Fake Brazilian asks, how does having a good or bad opening or ending theme affect a show, in your opinion? I don't think it does at all.
I think it does have an effect in the sense that having a eye-catching opening animation sequence with like a catchy song is something that makes people more inclined to check out the first couple episodes, or at least the very first episode. I think a huge part of what made Attack on Titan such a thing was that theme song in that opening sequence, which got, you know,
became a meme, parody, basically. So,
yeah, it incessantly. And so I think a lot of like the big popular shows, you know, even though I would think that, oh, you know, you skip past this or you watch it just, you know, as you're getting a drink or whatever. You need to have that, because if you just have like something nondescript, people seem to not be hyped up about the show before it comes out. And a lot of it just ties into promotion, you know, because so much of those opening theme songs are by some sort of record label. And if they've got like a hot act they want to push, that means they'll get a lot more buzz going about something. And so it does help. I don't think it's a direct effect of a show, but it is certainly there's a reason why Naruto and such has like, you know, 20 openings and there's always like a hot band doing the theme song and what have you each time.
Right. But I don't think there's a huge amount of damage that a poor or a boring opening can do. I mean, except for maybe a little bit of that kind of eye catch factor. Maybe it lacks some of that, but you know, I think if it's a good show, then it's a good show regardless. And you can always skip the crappy opening.
Yeah, who knows if Crest of the Stars would have been more, you know, well liked today if that opening had more, been more than just spinning universes. Who knows?
I don't know. I think what you're talking about would matter if that stuff was on television and there was a flipping channels catching your eye factor to it. But none of this stuff, you have to select that you are going to watch it. It's not something that will just catch you out of the corner of your eye, or, hey, what was that I just flipped past? You have to pick it. You have to choose that you're going to watch it. So there's really no catching someone unawares element here. It's just, you know, it's the theme song.
There are a few musical acts that I think are big enough that people who are fans would look at that list of like 50 shows that are coming out every season and they'll say, oh, but this one's got the song by Yoko Kanno or TM Revolution or somebody of that nature, or Jam Project, and say, okay, well, I'll check out that one. And I think that's the effect it's got.
Sure. That seems reasonable to me. Okay. Vinny Av AGC asks, what's the best anime or manga version of Sherlock Holmes?
Manga?
I think every like anime manga version of Sherlock Holmes I can think of is some sort of cartoon dog, because there's not only Sherlock Hound. Yep. There's also Sherlock Bones.
How was that, Gerald, by the way?
It's adorable. Very cute, of what I've read of it.
There is also the manga adaptation of the BBC Sherlock, and it's just scene for scene redrawing what you saw in the show already. So depending on how fanatical you are about that show, maybe that's the answer.
I think the answer is the Miyazaki-directed episodes of Sherlock Hound.
Did a few, right? Like maybe half?
He did five, actually. Five. He only did five, and three of those I think were used as the opening like bit for Nausicaa. You'd come in, you'd watch like two or three episodes of this, and then watch Nausicaa in 1982. And those episodes are great. They're a lot of fun. They are a little bit, you know, aged down a bit, and it's from, you know, the intended audience for Sherlock Holmes. But those they're pretty good. Then the
all right.
Other
so my
episodes,
question: Sherlock Hound versus the Great Mouse Detective.
Sherlock Hound, for sure. I mean, everyone's going to jump in on the comments and be like, they stole the clock tower or whatever, but screw them. That's like saying, like, oh, Kimba ripped off, you know, Lion King ripped off. It's like, bullshit, motherfucker. You never watched Kimba. You read that on Wikipedia.
I just
don't think there are that many anime manga versions of Sherlock Holmes that really...
There are a bunch that haven't come out in English.
I can believe that.
Because I mean, there's like Dear Holmes and...
Oh, yeah, there's Milky Holmes. That's your favorite one, right?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I'll go on record as just saying, like, I've always found Sherlock Holmes as a character and as a... I found the stories and the characters to be dull and not interesting. So I don't care about adaptations of Sherlock Holmes, be they British, American, animated or not. I don't give a fuck about Sherlock Holmes. It always put me to fucking sleep.
Gerald's got a Baker Street Irregular sign above his TV.
He is possibly my favorite fictional character. So
good for you.
Pistols at dawn.
Yep.
Yeah, but I know everyone's fucking gaga over Sherlock Holmes, but I've always just been like, yeah, whatever. Great Mouse Detective isn't too bad, though. All right. Also from Fake Brazilian, what's the most obsessed you've been about any one show? And was your obsession more than just marathoning the show?
I feel like the answer to this is usually, for a lot of people, a show that you were heavily into when you were a teenager or when you were
started out,
college.
Yeah.
So for me, that answer, you know, kind of almost by default, it would be Robotech. I was, you know, having to go out of my way to watch that show and then find all the supplementary materials and, you know, read up about it and figure out, in so doing, that there was this whole other world out there, quote unquote. I mean, I knew it was anime before I'd seen it, but that's one of those things where I was at that age, 14 or whatever, and, you know, you can have that kind of consuming mania about something to really throw yourself into a show like that.
Yeah, same thing for me with Sailor Moon, like that same kind of age range, and that was kind of the show that, I mean, I'd watched other shows that were, you know, dubbed anime, but I didn't really think about it as being Japanese. That was the first one that I really, like, went out of the way to, you know, find stuff online and track down the original Japanese versions, and yeah.
It's funny, because I was doing that also with Sailor Moon, except even though by that point, I'd already seen Bubblegum Crisis and Robotech and stuff like that and gone through the same thing. So it's just, yeah, it has to do with, like, I don't know, maybe it's all the hormones.
I think for me, it was, I guess since I started, like, as an anime fan so early, one of the earliest shows that I watched, in terms of just the stuff that I've bought and how I've kept up with it, was Galforce. And in terms of just the stuff that I own for it, I mean, I own, like, the original video cassettes for it and the multiple DVD releases and the Japanese DVD releases, and I own a bunch of cells from it, and there is very little merchandise of that show that was ever made, and there's very, very few people who like that show or even remember that show, so it set me up very well for the rest of my anime experiences in liking shows nobody else likes.
Yeah. Well, sometimes it's good. I mean, it can be frustrating to like things that are not that popular because, you know, you don't have as many people to talk to. But sometimes it's nice to have something that you can actually conceivably, like,
I could own everything from Galforce.
Yeah, like, you can actually get your hands around the whole thing as opposed to, like, something enormous where...
Yeah, it would be nice to meet one other person anywhere who really, really likes Galforce, but nobody else does.
It's just
I like that the laser beams curve.
Yeah, I mean, that is neat, but yeah,
and
I mean, I've met one other guy, like, at a convention who was, like, selling posters at a booth, and he said, oh yeah, I love that show, it's one of my favorites, and that was about the extent of our discussion. So,
oh, I thought you were going to say, like, you know, you accidentally collided with them, and it was like the end of Time Cop, because the same matter couldn't occupy the same space.
But I think in terms of, like, maybe the depth of experience and sort of the richness and, like, something that I can always go back to when there's new things in it for me, I think maybe Utena. And I can always go back to that and see an angle or details that I didn't notice before and get something else out of it.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, in terms of, like, you know, being obsessed, my obsession always manifested itself in just trying to get as much of the show as I could. So I, you know, started my own fansub tape trading thing in college just so I could be the guy who had all the shows. And so, you know, there were my favorites. Like, you know, I was obsessively trying to get all those Hecto Rurouni Kenshin tapes.
Oh yeah, that was why I joined Anime Club too, man.
Well, I joined Anime Club and then quickly became the guy who supplied Anime Club with their shit. So I was the pusher.
Did you get to be a tape god?
Oh, I was totally the tape god. but I just wanted to be the guy who had the stuff, and also I wanted to see it first because this was during the time when, like, you know, Escaflowne was coming out tape by tape. And that every episode ends on a cliffhanger. So we'd get the new tape in, show it, everyone would lose their fucking minds at the end of the tape. And then I was like, I'm going to be the guy that gets these tapes. So then I don't have to fucking wait for you assholes. I can just watch it. Yeah.
Aren't we so glad that era no longer exists?
I don't know, man.
Technology shapes the
kind of fans
we become.
I was as a king. No, yeah, of course I'm glad that shit's done.
But yeah, I mean, you brought up a great point. I mean, that was because of the technology that was available to us that really shaped like where you had to channel your energies towards was just getting the stuff and seeing these things. Now that that's like, you know, easy, instantaneous, people can sort of focus their manias and that energy towards some sort of other pursuit, whether it be finding out about the staff or getting, you know, information about, you know, fan derivative works and what have you. It's really changing, I think, the face of, you know, anime fandom as we know it. Mostly for the better, I'd say.
I would say so. Okay. Aaron Sarais asks, reading Neuromancer for a class, so I'm curious, what are your favorite cyberpunk anime or movies?
Well, despite the fact that I did just mention Bubblegum Crisis, I don't consider it cyberpunk for various nerd nitpicky reasons. Oh. But I will say the 80 Police Files OAV is perhaps the most like cyberpunk of Japanese cartoons. Not the television series. That was horrible.
Awful.
Certainly, you know, I did mention, I think there's almost maybe a drinking game of my AnCast guest appearances that I do have to drop Cyber City 08-0808 somewhere into the conversation. But as far as like being a realization of like this broken down futurescape where transhumanism is all the rage, it certainly lives up to the title.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I wonder sometimes, I think you could quibble on a lot of different, you know, anime and manga iterations of whether they could technically be considered cyberpunk or not in terms of not having like the ethos. Cause I mean, that's sort of the argument, I guess, with Ghost in the Shell, right? Is it has a lot of the same elements in terms of, you know, cyborgs and questions about transhumanism, but
doesn't really
have the same sort of attitude.
Let's go ahead and remove the purity test and, you know, whatever strikes you as being cyberpunk, just go ahead and, you know, it's fine.
Well, what is talking about cyberpunk in the year 2014, if not a giant purity test argument?
I guess so.
We got for real all the bad parts of cyberpunk in reality in the lives we live today.
Yes.
Yep.
Well, none of the cool parts.
Where's my monofilament wire whip?
Yeah.
Where's my choking smog and dystopian neon? That. Wait, yep. I have that.
Where's my language chips?
Yeah.
Where's my government run by corporations? Oh, wait.
Yeah.
Hey, now.
I want room service.
Well, so I mean, Gerald, Clarissa, did you have a favorite? Like something you would name
as a favorite?
Let's
see. Would Megazone 2-3 count as cyberpunk?
Yes. It counts. Anything counts.
Yeah,
it's fine.
Then I'm going to go with that because there isn't a lot that's been made. I mean, cyberpunk period. Anything outside of novels, there hasn't just not been a lot made.
Yeah.
So
I mean, I do like Bubblegum Crisis, but I might have to go with Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's just not that much of it. Some of it made in the 80s and the 90s, and then that's kind of it. So
I mean, even American movies, like there just isn't a lot. So
it's like, boy, they sure did like Blade Runner for a few years.
I will say to anyone who's into cyberpunk, I do recommend Shadowrun Returns. It's a great game.
Mm. Yeah, keep meaning to pick that up. So I can play it for 5 minutes on a stream and then never again. all right, let's see here. Your friend of mine, Brian Raw at Anime Research, asks, thoughts on the upcoming live-action Pat Labor from the stills and trailer?
Oh, boy.
I'm going to add an addendum to this because we didn't get a question about it. But I'm going to say / Kiki's Delivery Service.
Oh, boy. Now the gloves are off. Okay, so the live-action Pat Labor conceptually should be able to work fine because the original Pat Labor series wasn't really that effects-driven. It was mostly a character study as far as the interplays between them. That being said, Japan lags sharply behind other places as far as visual effects is concerned. And if you're going to do giant robots, they just can't look good on Japanese, you know, live action budgets. It's part of why
they built the actual like Pat Labor for it. So
what do you think about the new uniforms?
They don't bother me.
They don't bother me either. It's just kind of like the general modern movie aesthetic, like make everything kind of military and, you know, not very colorful.
I mean, my problem, but the thing is that Pat Labor survives on its script and its interaction between the characters. And so it'll come down to how good those actors are and how well they're directed. And the batting average for movies based on anime has been so bad.
Drama-wise, anyway. Drama-wise. I think some of the comedies have pulled it off.
Yeah, like, yeah. I think Otokojuku was actually really solid. They managed to do that very well, I think. But I don't know. I'm not betting on Pat Labor being good.
Okay, what about Kiki's? Did you not see the footage of Gigi the Talking Cat?
I didn't see that. I did see, like, the teaser trailer, which was about it. But I'm not counting on that either.
I did watch that trailer and the Gigi trailer. And that movie, I think, looks terrible.
It's hard to realize that how much of a fantasy world Kiki's Delivery Service really is until you try to film one set using like a real existing place.
Well, and with what apparently looks like no money, because that movie looks cheap as fuck. Like,
yeah,
it's like, well, we had $20 in a weekend.
I think that's why we're all dreading, you know, the inevitable live action Attack on Titan.
God.
That Subaru just commercial, man.
That looked good, but
it looked
kind of
cool.
I mean, if they made that, that would be like the biggest scale Japanese movie that's ever been made, almost.
What
so,
about the live action Yamato?
I didn't
coming
see it.
Soon.
Of course it did.
Coming soon from Funimation.
I saw that. Reviewed it for the site.
I saw it when I went to Tokyo, and so there were no subtitles or anything, and my Japanese is very weak. I couldn't fully understand all of the script. You know, it's a very kind of generic Hollywood-ish movie. It's not bad, but it's bland, and I didn't particularly like what they did with the gamelons. So
yeah,
the world will see soon enough.
It's trying.
Battlestar Galactica, all right.
I don't know if it's trying, but it feels like they took a lot of inspiration from Battlestar Galactica, the 2000s Battlestar Galactica, not the 70s one. But it's perfectly. I thought it was perfectly fine as a movie. I saw it subtitled. At a film market screening, like this is when they were trying to sell it, I thought it was fine. I didn't really have a problem with it. It could have been so much worse. The CG isn't very good, you know, like it is on any live action anime movie. But it's okay. But that Kiki's movie, man, that looks so cheap. I can't, like, when she's sitting on that broom. Like, I feel like you can see the wires holding the broom up, and it's so cheap looking.
Yeah, that's the problem with these live-action things, is that your money goes a lot further in animation than it does in live-action. I mean, just compare the live-action films of Mamoru Oshii to the animated films of Mamoru Oshii back when he still gave a shit.
Yeah.
I mean, they were produced on similarly comparable budgets, yet, you know, Ghost in the Shell or what have you looks leagues better. I mean, the best example is compare, like, say, the various Kerberos Panzer Cop live-action films to how Jinro looks.
Well, and, I fell asleep at those movies, but yeah, those
You don't like Jinro, but anyway, you have to admit that it looks...
I love Jinro, the live-action ones, I mean.
Okay, now consider the fact that they each cost comparable amounts of money to make. And so, you know,
as far as a
film is concerned, you know, one is in animated form is certainly much more spectacular, and I think that is part of what made anime like the force that it is the fact that these people didn't really have the budgets or the resources to realize their visions in a live action medium. And so they went to animation.
Right. But now they're competing with, you know, Hollywood productions that are churning out really, you know, big budget sci-fi or fantasy things. Maybe not as often as everybody would like, but
I think the lesson to be learned is a lesson that's been forgotten since the 80s and even the early 2000s, is that you can compete with that super high budget stuff as long as you have, like, you know, some sort of ingenuity and moxie. I mean, some of the best action movies ever made were those cheap Hong Kong, either kung fu movies or 80s gunplay movies, even like a movie like Versus, which is
I was going to bring up Versus because, I mean, they did as good as they could with what they had.
Right.
And they didn't scale it up beyond that.
And the problem with things like Pat Labor and even things like Kiki's Delivery Service is that they're inherently very effects-driven to some extent in terms of realizing this future or this magic or what have you. And if you don't have the scratch to actually pull that off, it's hard to get faith in it.
Yeah,
so the Attack on Titan movie Wow.
Right, because I mean, actually just doing sort of the computer animation has become more affordable, but actually meshing it to the point with the live action footage to the point that it doesn't look obviously fake, it just takes time, and you have to pay for those man hours.
Yeah, I imagine like the budget that a Hollywood movie has for effects is like is like the entire budget for a lot of those films.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
No, way more than the entire budget. You're talking about movies that cost $250 million to make. And, you know, you want to look at the budgets on most of this live-action Japanese stuff. It's not a tenth of that.
Like $10 million or something?
It's not a tenth of that. Yeah. These are tiny budget movies. America has this gigantic film industry, so that's why that kind of money gets spent. Japan's film industry, as you know, in comparison, is much smaller. So you're not going to see that level of money being spent or investment being made. But it doesn't stop those movies from looking like dog shit.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, the way that we tout our big special effects extravaganzas is film. The way Japan touts big special effects things is television. I mean, that's what tokusatsu means, special effects. But, you know, here's the spectacle that is, you know, a Kamen Rider TV. It's like, okay, these effects are cheesy and laughable, but that's part of, you know, if you're into that. But as far as taking it seriously, it's very difficult.
Also, those shows are made for 8-year
olds and 26 year old mothers.
Yes.
Okay. Negi Bozu asks, so with Space Danny's good ratings, do you think this is a door for anime to become more mainstream again? Probably not.
I doubt it.
I
because
think there
of
would
time.
Have to be more things similar to Space Dandy.
You can't just have one thing.
Yeah.
You got to have a string of things, and I think they did make the right call of having Black Lagoon be a thing to run in the block. I mean, I think if between Space Dandy and then Black Lagoon, and then, hey, maybe by then the Attack on Titan dub will be complete, if you could go into that. You know, you'd have a solid year worth of things, but it's still, at the end of the day, is on very late at night when only the believers are on. But yeah, it's a good step. It just, you can't be the only thing. It's not going to do it on its own.
Yeah.
Indeed. Shintaku asks, best anime adapted from a video game, and I'm just going to preempt you here. I know everyone's going to say Battle Arena Toshinden. Let's just leave that out.
Damn. Oh, man. That's one of those things where you can just put it on and skip to any random scene in it and get something funny.
That's what we did. We did that, yeah.
Our chapter skips weren't working at the panel. That we were
so we just clicked said, and there was...
We hit the jackpot every single time.
Yep, man, video... That, and of course, they're not talking about like visual novels. They're talking about real video games.
I think they just mean video games, yeah. And hey, what do you mean visual novels aren't real video games, Gerald?
Ready for the
I'm gonna leave some angry emails. Well, let's go down the line here. So, Gerald, let's start with you. Best video game anime adaptation.
Oh, man, I'm just gonna throw it out there. In terms of just entertainment value, I still am thoroughly entertained by the Street Fighter II movie, the 92-93 one. It's ridiculous, but if I'm a Street Fighter fan and I go to watch that, I am entertained and pleased the entire way through.
Okay, Clarissa?
Oh, maybe we're digging Sengoku the bottom of the barrel already.
Sengoku Basara, a very good pick.
That is a good one. I wouldn't have thought of that.
And it counts. Daryl?
Well, let's see. My first two picks have just been swiped away from me. So, you know, now I have to, like, cheat and be like, what if they, like, did, like, some revival of some anime thanks to Pachinko or Patchy Slot? But Patchy Slot's not a video game either. I hesitate to consider Pachinko a real game.
You like the Gungrave anime, right, Daryl?
The Gungrave anime is surprisingly well done, despite a terrible first episode. And that was based on a video game that nobody expected to really be good. It was kind of fun, and then it was over. That was a surprise sleeper sort of show, at least for the flashback portion of it. The actual part that was attempting to be set during the continuity of the video games was terrible, but at least it wasn't that much of the show.
Oh, and you know, we're getting a re-release of Fatal Fury.
Fatal Fury was like the definitive Masami Obari work, I feel. Those two, you just gotta cut here. Like, Fatal Fury, Street Fighter, okay, no more fighting game anime ever, please.
Yep.
Surprised you didn't say Sight Unseen, the Bayonetta Gonzo movie.
I want that to be enjoyable, but the trouble is that what made Bayonetta good is, you know, that Yuji Shimomura action choreography and cinematography, and that's not going to be present in this. Yeah, so yeah. It's going to be really hard.
Okay, another favorites question. Geoff Tevitz asks... Geoff, sorry, Geoff.
That's what I'm calling him.
He's been on the show. I owe him an apology for that. give us what you consider the most spectacular vehicular wreckage and or explosion in anime.
I think this is Katsuhiro Otomo's Place to Shine.
Yeah.
I mean, whether you want to
wreckage or explosion.
Whether you want to pick that very iconic explosion in Akira or the iconic explosion at the end of Metropolis, or maybe you want to give Hideaki Anno a bone and say the God Warrior firing in Nausicaä. Those are like the most spectacular explosions in anime that just kind of stick with you for a while. Mm. As far as vehicular wreckage is concerned, like, how about, like, I don't know, like, most of the riding bean wrecks were for comedy.
So specifically the wrecks, not the chase. So
yeah, just carnage unfolding.
Right.
So this tough one, I don't have an answer.
A wake of destruction in his path, let me tell
you. How about Technopolis of the 21st century? That was entirely about, you know, what's that stupid thing? A truck, like, driving around and destroying things.
It wasn't very spectacular.
No, it wasn't. It was terrible.
I feel like I'm actually drawing... I mean, other than the Otomo stuff, I feel like I'm drawing a blank, really, on... Especially on, like, the vehicle question. All I can think of is not robots. It's not anime. Well, it's not animated yet, but, you know, in, like, JoJo's Part 4, when he, like, wrecks the motorcycle and then reassembles it on the other side.
Also, I'm going to go
like
with...
Just like in that Rennie Harlan movie.
I'm going to go with Crusher Joe episode Ash for the best explosion, because that was a slow explosion of an entire planet over the course of 20 minutes. And so... That was a terrific, terrific episode.
We knew you'd say Crusher Joe. You always work that one in.
I try.
Well, I'm going to go with Harbor Light Story from Fashion Lala.
Fashion Lala? Isn't it Fancy Lala?
The title of it is Fashion Lala. That's
yep.
The guy flips that truck and then motorcycles explode and shit. Even though it's based on a Barbie doll line. God damn it, Justin, for giving me that. Vintango asks, were any of you into collecting Laserdiscs? And if so, did you keep your collection?
I did not have the money to collect Laserdiscs.
Yeah. I kind of skipped that. I went from VHS to DVD.
I bought multiple Laserdisc players because the things would die constantly and they were very cheap. At least I found the players to be pretty cheap because I would usually get them used, which is probably why they die. But I do still have... a pile of laser discs around, and it's hard for me to get rid of them because, especially like the Tenchi laser discs, they actually had really beautiful cover art that was made for Laserdisc. Like all the VHS and DVD stuff that came later, that was all adapted later. But they also had these really beautiful inserts, and they'd have two sets of inserts: one in Japanese in color, and one in English in monotone.
Mm.
And they were. Really nice. They had like production notes, and they had like dual covers on them, and so those I actually keep around just because they're such nice releases. Yeah.
I always coveted those Utena laser discs because the covers were gorgeous.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad we don't have laser discs anymore because they're big and bulky, but at the time they were very nice just because the art was so nice on them.
Yeah, the only time I ever bought a laser disc. Was during my aforementioned days as a supplier to the local anime club, and the big thing that they were all real excited about was His and Her Circumstances, and so I pre-ordered the Volume 1 Laserdisc of that, because they were like, we're going to subtitle this one ourselves, we're so excited to see this. So I pre-ordered the Volume 1 Laserdisc of that, got it in like a week after it came out in Japan, which at the time was a big deal. I had to pay a lot of money for it. And then immediately just sold it to the guy who was super... I like went over to a friend's house, because I didn't have a Laserdisc player. Went over to my friend's house, watched it, said like, oh, this is incomprehensible, unless you speak Japanese. So, you know, that's not like an entry-level show for Japanese.
No.
And I spoke Japanese at the time, but maybe like a second grade level, but not enough to get through something like that. So immediately sold it to the guy who was super stoked about it, and they subtitled it and blah, 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 blah. But that's the only time I ever did that. And That was like the tail end of stuff being first issued on Laserdisc.
Yeah, that was right at the end. And it says something when the show that you get into, they have to invent new subtitling technology for DVDs in order to subtitle it properly.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
So did you keep any of your Laserdisc, Gerald? Because the only Laserdisc that I am in possession of is a copy on Laserdisc of the Crystal Triangle.
I've got them all. I mean, they're all in that ottoman that is downstairs in my place. Next time you're over, I'll show them to you.
What are the spectacular titles that you have? Do you own Green Legend Ron?
I have that on VHS, even though the box looks like a Laserdisc. In fact, I can walk over to my ottoman right now and look at them right now. But yeah, it's a whole pile of, you know, some ADV stuff, a lot of the Tenchi Muyo stuff, and a couple of Funimation things. I have like Oh My Goddess and You're Under Arrest and such.
Those are Animego.
That's Animego, yeah, because they spent a lot of time on their Laserdiscs.
I don't think Funimation ever released anything on Laserdisc.
Nope.
Yeah. Okay, Tom Aznable asks, guess what this is a question about? Have you guys checked out the Kids Battling Model Kits show, Gundam Build Fighters?
I checked out an episode of it, and it felt very, you know, card battler sort of game, sort of show, and I'm not a big card battler sort of show type of person.
I feel like that's the show that accomplishes what Gundam Age set out to do. And all they did in order to pull it off was make the subtextual narrative that runs throughout all of Gundam textual. That text being, buy Gundam model kits.
I haven't seen it.
Fairly well. For kids and adults alike are enjoying them some Gundam Build Fighters.
Mm. Yeah, I need to watch more of it, because I did see some scenes of it that were hilarious, like a guy picking up a girl in a restaurant by sending her a Gundam model kit.
Oh yeah, I saw screenshots of that.
Yeah, that is that doesn't work in real life, but
it should.
It should.
All right. Vicious Smith asks, if Space Dandy doesn't save all of anime, is it lost? I just want to say this. Like, this has kind of been floating around. Like, Space Dandy is going to save anime. Like, herp, derp, derp.
It's almost a catchphrase joke at this point. Like, oh, Kill a Kill saves anime, whatever. You know who's to blame for this?
I wouldn't say almost.
Tim Maughan. Ever since he said Redline saves anime in his drunken, you know, coming out at 4 a.m. from some film festival proclamation. That's who I'm pinning this one on. Yeah, but the concept of any one show needing to save anime, you know, is kind of inherently flawed. I think most reasonable people understand that. But this is the internet. There are no reasonable people.
Yeah, I wonder, like, I would be willing to bet that Watanabe would be, like, fucking terrified if you told him that people on the in the West honestly thought that the show was responsible for redeeming the image of anime in the West.
Because the show is so committed to being incredibly dumb.
Yep.
And that's what I respect it for.
I think this is actually the last question we got about Space Dandy. So I did kind of want to get your guys' take on it, assuming you've been watching it.
Oh, yeah. Been watching it. Mm-hmm.
To start, I've been really enjoying watching it on Saturdays. It's fun to be able to have a new show just to DVR. Like, I don't watch that. That's a new experience, watching a brand new anime on my DVR before it's available anywhere else, dubbed, let alone anything else. I really enjoy the show. I think it's funny. I don't think there's been like a shitty episode. I think there have been some kind of mediocre ones, but the last one was a zombie episode that I was dreading, and it actually turned out to be really funny. I'm sticking with my diagnosis that show has a terminal problem, with the second half always being so much better than the first half of the episode.
A lot of people actually thought the first half of the zombie one was better, just because the second half, it's sort of like operating on the same principle as like that extended Family Guy joke. Like, it's a joke, and then it keeps going, and then it's like, oh my god, they're bringing it along, and then it keeps going further, and it's like, okay, this is actually funny. You know, that's one of the things where all the action was in the first half, and then the second half was like, man, this is really stupid.
Well, even to me, like, that was great.
This is awesomely
because
stupid.
Usually the second half of the episode was better because that's when all the crazy animation started happening. which is that show. I really love it when they just go nuts with the animation. But yeah. in the last episode, it was the writing that got really crazy in the second half, and I was in love with it. I thought this is really funny. It's really clever. They're just taking this as far as they could possibly go, and then it ends with a silly punchline, and it's done. And I thought it was great. I'm really enjoying Space Dandy. I am fucking tired of people complaining about it not being Cowboy Bebop 2. I don't understand why this far in you would still be sitting there waiting, going, why isn't this Cowboy Bebop yet? It's not going to fucking be Cowboy Bebop. Like, get the fuck right. over it.
Yeah, I think it's just enough like Cowboy Bebop to... I don't know what people's problems are. It's perfectly fun. I don't know. Well, those people
saw Samurai Champloo after Cowboy Bebop and are like, aha, this is this guy's bread and butter. And it's what he does. But again, yeah. when he was at Otakon, he said, that isn't by design. I do all kinds of stuff. It just sort mm-hmm. of worked out that I ended up doing two shows that were similar. And so I think the last thing that he wants is for Space Bandy to be very reminiscent of Cowboy Bebop. He wants to show that, look, I can do other stuff, folks.
Right. I mean,
Kids on the Slope, you know, kind of showed that already.
Yeah. I mean, I love the show. I love that it's the show that has got this spectacular animation. I cannot see how they can keep that animation up throughout the whole show. I mean, it is like theatrical quality, just gorgeous, the amount of movement and stuff that's going on and the design that's going on in the background. And just from a visual standpoint, I am floored by every episode so far, but it's just plain fun. I just love that we can get a fun show once in a while.
Yeah.
So
I agree.
I hear from a lot of people who say, oh, if this wasn't from the guy who made Cowboy Bebop, I wouldn't be watching this, or I wouldn't keep watching, except, you know, it's from the guy who made Cowboy Bebop. But I mean, I think even if you didn't know that, I think there's enough like bizarre spectacle to the designs and to especially the crazy animation for all the key animation buffs that mm-hmm. there's an appeal to that show.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I mean, the one, you know, complaint that I have about it is I think the show is weakest when it's relying on the like, oh, haha, isn't it hilarious that he's, you know, a pervert and likes go into these stupid booby restaurants. Like, I hope that they really kind of don't lean on that too much.
Yeah.
Because I think that's easily like the most like boring part.
Yeah, they've
and
already.
I'm not interested in that sort of, you know, like hilarious
slow motion girl type. Running, shiny boobs with sparkles, like, you know, it's like any other show at that point during those moments, right?
Yeah. So I mean, I think if they focus more on like, you know, him being a failboat and like just the ridiculous antics and the spectacular animation, they'll be in really good shape.
I honestly you're absolutely correct, and they have run the boobies thing into the fucking ground, and it either needs to stop or they need to go with the rule of 800s where it's funny the fifth time for a different reason, then it's funny the 50th time, and then it stops being funny, but then it's funny for a completely different reason the 800th time. But that's usually something that's reserved for a Western-style comedy, so I have no idea if that's what they're trying to do with it, but right now it's still things like the show thinks it's funny when he says boobies. And I'm like, you know what? This is tired. Like, put it away already. But that's kind of my one complaint, you're right. Okay, anybody, any more thoughts on that?
I think it's a great show. I think people need to watch it, and people need to lighten up a bit.
You're right.
I think, yeah, we'll probably do a full-on review of it once it's done. I mean, I feel like, you know, we kind of understand where the show is going, but who knows? Anime is notorious for taking that hard turn partway through. Anything can happen.
Well, it's scheduled for 26, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess we'll see your review of it next year.
Yep, that's how we roll, baby.
All right, Wayne 01 wants to know how y'all feel about One Piece.
I like One Piece a lot. It's just one of those things where it's very easy to fall behind on it. And then it's very easy to realize when you try to get caught up that there's really no need to catch up. You can just jump back in and you haven't really missed anything. Because the appeal of this thing is the goofy characters doing goofy things. And they kind of do the same goofy things. And it's so inventive. That's really what I kind of praise it for, is that every chapter has something you've never seen before. Like, you got to give Oda and that crew serious props for how imaginative they are as far as imagery goes.
Yeah, I mean, I really, really enjoyed One Piece, but I completely fell behind on it, and I just haven't had a chance to really dive back in yet, but...
I never started it, so it's just never been on my radar.
Well, Gerald, you only have 630 episodes to watch.
Yeah, and because I'm like a super nerd, it's not something that I can, you know, in good conscience just start at like episode like 300 and something or 400 and something. So I have to start from the beginning, and it's just such a big mountain to climb.
Yeah, that's why I really don't watch a lot of those kind of things. I don't watch the anime, even though I do really like to have the voice acting and see it in motion and everything. I can just get through it so much faster by reading the manga.
I mean, I actually did watch the first couple of episodes, like those first three or four, and I really didn't like them at all. I thought Buggy was really stupid. And
He's not around for that long. So
that's the thing is, I don't know that. I mean, I assumed he was just like a minor villain or whatever, but I just was like, yeah, this isn't that interesting to me. And so I just kind of moved on.
I'll take Shigeru Chiba yelling and being belligerent in anime anyway, I'll get it. And so the fact that Buggy the Clown is a semi-recurring character in One Piece and Shigeru Chiba is basically only around still to be Buggy the Clown, I'll take what I can get.
I mean, I used to say, like, oh, geez, I don't have time to watch 600 episodes of One Piece. And I thought that was a comic exaggeration, but it is, in fact, not. And
it's actually over 700.
And it's at 632 right now. And
I just wanted to make the number.
And I actually seriously don't have time for that. So I think if you've seen 600 episodes of anything, it's like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
I could see reading that as like a comic, like if it came out every week, I could that's different if it's just like a comic and you're just flipping through, you know, those 20 pages once a week. That's totally different.
I equate it to something like Batman, where Batman has like hundreds and hundreds of issues, but you don't have to go back to Detective Comics 1 to follow up and care about what's going on in the current story. You maybe just go back a little bit. One Piece is the same way. It's just so much harder to figure out what's that point that I jump in on.
Mouse1497 asks, what are your favorite anime short films? Let's start with Gerald. On the spot, answer right now.
Let's see. What was that one? Starlight? I'm missing
Starlight Angel.
I really like Starlight Angel, even though that's one of the segments that nobody seems to like. So I'm going to go with Starlight Angel.
The record will show, if you go back to our review of Robot Carnival, that was my pick. But I am going to pick, I guess, On Your Mark, the short music video that Hayao Miyazaki did by Chage and Asuka. I love that. I even showed it because I did panels on short anime, so I remembered showing that one. And it blows my mind every time that nobody has seen this thing. It was one of those things that when I was coming up as an anime fan, like everyone showed that. That was like a tape that got passed around at Anime Club all the time. But it's been so far gone since that like a whole new generation has to discover it all over.
Yeah.
I think I'd probably go with Magnetic Rose.
From
From Memories. Yeah.
Koji Morimoto.
Okay.
All excellent picks.
Yep. All of those are great. I wish I could remember off the top of my head the names of the segments in Mind Game that I really liked, but
Mind Game was one movie. I don't think that had
I'm sorry, I'm thinking of Genius Party.
Yeah.
My mistake. Thinking of Genius Party. Can't remember.
Yeah, because there's a couple good ones and a couple that are like, all right. But yeah. Such is the nature of anthology works.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, no, nothing comes to mind. I liked that. Crunchyroll for a long time had this weird thing that was, I can't remember the name of it. It was, it wasn't animated traditionally like anime. It was like, I'm going to have to
Abunai Sisters?
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, that's what I was thinking of. You're absolutely right. Tasty Sub asks, fantasy question, what works of literature, a.k.a. not light novels, would you really like to see get an anime adaptation?
Ooh.
Well. Let's see, has Count of Monte Cristo been animated? It must have
been. Gankutsuo.
Yeah, Gankutsuo, yeah. Sort of.
Well, I'm thinking, I'm thinking like more of a traditional sort of adaptation of it, but yeah. Mm-hmm. Actually, there was a book.
Like the Foundation trilogy kind of stuff turned into anime somehow. I think, some of that old-time Asimov sort of things. I think they could really do some service with realizing an animated form.
I mean, weirdo answer, I want to say The Great God Pan. But I don't know. Like, now that they can do such a good job, even with like science fiction and fantasy stuff in live action, I'd really like to see a good adaptation of the Temeraire books. But I don't know if I'd rather see a live action or an animated one. The Temeraire books, by the way, since they're maybe not as well known as some other things, are a sort of historical fantasy series. It's basically the Napoleonic War, but they have dragons.
I'm actually surprised, Gerald, that your pick wasn't like a proper adaptation of Lensman.
I would really like to see Lensman done properly. That would be really great. Yeah, maybe I was trying to think as high minded because the word literature came out in that. So.
Right.
Yeah, and E.E. Doc Smith is pretty pulp.
Yeah, that's very pulp because like what also came to mind was like an old book I read called Rebecca's World, but I don't think anybody knows that, and it's been out of print for like 70 years.
Hmm.
Yeah, go ahead. Seeing like E.E. Doc Smith stuff done really well with a budget would be pretty awesome.
Yeah, I guess Romeo and Juliet. Wait, they did that.
Yeah.
Dog of Flanders. Style. No, wait, they did that. how about Anne of Green Gables? Wait, that's been done.
Nobody wants to see, you know, reading Anne of Green Gables thinking, oh, I definitely want to watch a Kage no Ion.
How about a proper adaptation of Earthsea?
I was actually about to say that.
I thought you were going to say Dune.
Oh,
Hey, that movie's good enough, but...
David Lynch one, exactly.
That could work as an anime. I mean, you know, if we're not just talking literature, like, I think it's money left on the table for them to not do a Harry Potter. Because it's already a shonen anime. Just fucking turn it into an anime. Like,
yeah,
just begging for it. Just begging for it. And it could run forever.
Yeah, just scene for scene, you know, Chris Columbus style reenactment of that book, and people would eat it up.
There you go. Make a lot of money. Okay. Cecil234 asks, what are your thoughts on retro gaming, collecting old consoles and games?
It's hard for me to wrap my mind around the concept of what's referred to as retro gaming because it's all just games I played when I was a kid.
Well, I'm going to limit this.
Being retro.
I'm going to limit this to just collecting old consoles and video games. Like, you know, having a shelf of NES games.
For me, I don't really have like that allure to actually having the like original controller and having to blow on the cartridge and whatever. I'm fine with, you know, the emulation and having like, you know, some settings for increasing the video quality or, you know, various other modern features that emulation allows. I certainly have plenty of friends who are into that. They spend an awful lot of money to recapture something that they either experienced as a kid or something that they feel they missed out on as a kid.
Yeah, I have a hard time believing any of those people had a weekend where they went across St. Thomas to spend a weekend with their friend who was the only person they knew who had a Nintendo, and the Nintendo didn't fucking work. And so I
really want to recapture that memory.
Yeah, that's what I want to recapture. Yeah, I have nothing against the people that do it. All the more power to them. I mean, I know younger people who collect old consoles because they kind of just want to play it on the original system, but I have no attachment to those consoles. They were just a pain.
Yeah, I have not gone back to like get my Atari 5200 and then get the phone keypad overlay that you're supposed to put over this thing because part of the 5200 controller was a fucking phone keypad.
Yeah, right.
You'd have to put over it to figure out what buttons do what.
How else are you going to play Star Raiders?
Yeah, I mean, I can, you know, respect the urge behind it, and I mean, I've seen some people that have some pretty impressive collections, and mm-hmm. you know, if that's what they like, then more power to them. But yeah, I'm kind of with Daryl. Like, for me, games, like, that's not really something where the physical copy is that important to me. So I'm fine with, you know, ROMs or you know, new digital versions.
Maybe if I had like a whole lot of money and like multiple rooms in my house.
Yeah.
I could, that would be like a nice like side thing.
Where you'd have real space to like display it.
Yeah, but you know, before then, which will never happen, then I'll just go with the ROMs.
All of my space is taken up by books, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I have like a box of – I have a box with an NES, a Super Nintendo, and a couple stacks of cartridges in it that, you know, I went through a short phase like maybe 7 or 8 years ago where I was snapping up old NES games and buying my – so I have a box that has basically my favorites in it that I'm thinking about getting rid of because I'm never going to plug that shit in again. Like, not only can you – do you have to roll the dice on whether or not the save battery is still working – it's a pain in the ass, and, like, I guess maybe I'll keep it in the closet so that if I emulate it, I don't have to feel bad about whatever, you know, that right. kind of thing. But, for me, it's like, I have a couple of friends who are wealthy and do have giant houses and have a room that's their gaming room. And their gaming room is, like, dedicated to old shit, so they have, like, a glass case full of sealed NES cartridges and crazy, like, perfectly restored and cleaned NESs that work perfectly and shit. And I go over to their house and be like, wow, this is neat. How much did this cost you? Thousands of dollars. It's like, okay, well, you can throw that away on this. I can't. And I don't know that I would. It's not that powerful. It's a powerful part of my childhood, but I don't want to build a shrine to it. So it's kind of like someone else's really friendly dog that you like going over to their house. You see the dog, you pet the dog, you play with the dog, and you go home where there is no dog that needs your attention all the time.
Like grandchildren.
It's one of those things. But yeah, my desire to collect that stuff is long gone. I like playing all that stuff, and I buy things on the virtual console, like when Nintendo puts them out, or you know, I'll rebuy old games over and over and over again. I think I've, you know, purchased Rez like 3 times. Castlevania Symphony of the Night, I think I bought that game like 5 times now on various platforms. But just keeping the old shit around, just it doesn't really seem. All right, this is a good question. Zumplin asks, what are some shows from the past decade that you think deserve more attention from anime fans? Daryl, let's start with you.
All right. Well, putting aside the fact that that is almost the like implied topic of our entire podcast.
Sure.
I think a show from the past decade, so that's going to be, you know, the 2000s at this point, one that I always liked that I think more people should give a shot, even though there's at least one person on this podcast who disagrees with me, is New Getter Robo. This was like a remake of Getter Robo that was like in the 2000s. Genion released it and paid entirely too much money to license that thing. But I think for the people who are into Gurren Lagann and want something crazy and insane that has like some high budget animation to it, that's a show for you. It's also incredibly raw, like as far as being crass and offensive and bloody as all get out. So, you know, you have been warned. But yeah, 13 episodes, not very long, and almost disliked by everyone except me.
Okay. I guess this is kind of stretching it, perhaps, but I really enjoyed this pretty long show. I guess it did get some airtime in America, but the anime fans didn't really latch onto it. It was Monster. It's a thriller, and I really enjoyed most every moment of that show. I kind of would like to see, you know, other long-form thrillers like it, but they're pretty few and far between.
Yeah, Naoki Urasawa, I mean, he's a guy who is pretty well-regarded, but not a whole lot of his stuff has been made into anime since Monster.
Yeah.
I can think of.
I mean, 20th Century Boys got a movie, didn't it?
Got a couple like movies that were all, like we said, about live-action Japanese movies just now.
Right.
Mm-hmm. God, I don't know. I'm trying to even remember, like, all the stuff that came out during
I was frantically going through the review index, too.
Yeah.
Moon Phase, right, Clarissa?
Yes, absolutely.
Clearly, yes.
Well, you did mention Gonkutsuo earlier, and I don't know if that's really something that really got a whole lot of attention among people, even when it came out.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it ever really got very huge. I mean, it's definitely something that I see people talk about every now and again, but not that much. And I think that it does deserve some attention. I think it really did a lot of interesting things.
Okay.
Although clearly I think the real answer is Geon Riders.
Yeah, that is long lost classic.
All right. My answer to that question is Macross 7.
Was that wasn't from the past decade, though.
That's
Yes, it was, Daryl. It's from every year.
I guess you're right.
There's no year without Macross 7. Okay, we got three left. Let's see here. This I'm actually curious about because I don't know the answer to this, and I want to know. So DuckDuck asks, how did you guys meet each other?
Anime Club.
No, yeah. We actually met earlier than Anime Clubs. We met at a convention.
I remember you and I met through hate at a convention.
That's correct. We were united by hatred.
I remember it was...
We both hated Nazca.
Yeah,
we were up on stage at an anime convention.
We were sitting in the audience and we were answering questions to each other because we were both big fucking nerds and trying to prove each other's, you know, E-peen.
Who had the strongest kung fu, that's right.
Yes.
And at one point, the answer to some question that we didn't know ended up being Nazca. And we were like, oh, that show fucking blows. And you're like... No way!
We looked at each other and the flowers like appeared around our heads and
yes,
we floated away. Yeah. So
I met Gerald and Clarissa. How did you meet Clarissa? Since you guys knew each other by the time
I think that was Anime Club. Yeah.
Yeah, we saw each other. Yeah, Jayco and Anime Club, which is not even around anymore because I mean, anime clubs in general kind of aren't really around much anymore. But yeah, that was back when they would still have them.
So what drew the two of you to one another? Was it hatred for Nazca or something else?
I think we both enjoyed like some of the same movies and stuff.
Oh, you weren't united by hate.
No, I don't think so.
But that was, oh gosh, that was such a long time ago now.
That's why our love will never be as pure, Daryl, as yours with Gerald. Because it just doesn't have that strong foundation of hatred.
Yeah, I don't remember. I think we were watching, like, My Neighbor Totoro or something. Yeah, that goes back a ways, yeah.
And then, I don't even remember. It was more than a few months ago.
And I know we would all chat during J-Con because no one really watched any anime at J-Con. So, mm-hmm. Or Jayco, I should say. Yeah.
When there was something shitty on.
But anytime. People just didn't watch stuff.
Well, yeah.
It was a social club more than
That's
anything else.
That's part of why anime clubs ceased to exist, is that people would show up to not watch anime, but just to fuck around.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was... it was clear that's where things were going in the... You know, before I left my anime club, you know, it was obviously just a social club. Like, we'd put something on and every, you know, half the room would go outside to socialize in the little courtyard outside the screening room. And then, you know, the chief topic of conversation was, where are we going to go for dinner after we're done with this? And you sort of wonder, like, who's in there watching this stuff? And it's like, well, we've all seen it before we decided to show it here. No one has any self-control, so we just watch it before we show up.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're killing the communal viewing part of this.
Actually, the way to fix that is how one of the local anime clubs has fixed it by holding their anime club in the sketchiest part of town you could possibly imagine. So you don't even
want
to go
outside.
No, you stay inside and you watch your anime and you be quiet because if you go outside, you know, there's no lights, there's nothing. It's just darkness.
Well, so then how did you decide to do a podcast together?
We'd known each other for years by that point because I'd been hanging out with Gerald and all that. And it was actually Clarissa's bright idea to get credit for college. Was there some gimmick like that?
It was going to be. I mean, I hoped to be able to do an independent study, but that didn't really work out. But, you know, there were some other people at UCF in the digital media program that were doing some podcast stuff. And that was, I mean, still pretty early on in the whole podcasting thing. And, you know, I saw some different ones that were taking off. So it seemed like something interesting to try out. And I think we kind of assumed that we would do a couple episodes and no one would listen to them. And then that would be it.
I also think that we were looking at the current state of anime podcasting at the time, and we were so pissed off with... I mean, there were a couple of good ones, like Weekly Anime Podcast was doing its thing, mm-hmm. and so, but, like, there were just these other, like, just shitty podcasts run by...
And we were like, we can do better than this.
Yeah.
And so it was put up or shut up time.
Yeah.
And it was as simple as that. Yeah. I mean, the reason it came about is that we're the only people who are willing to stand one another, to talk to each other. And that's how the podcast.
And it is also astonishingly easy to put together a podcast compared to almost anything else. So
yeah.
Yeah, it's much harder to shoot video.
Right, and we're not all in the same place, so we'd have to shoot separately and composite stuff together, and which is easier to do with just audio than with video.
Yeah, I think we're getting to a point where those podcasts you were talking about, like when you guys started, do any of them still exist?
Only a few.
Yeah, a few, but like, I mean, the worst one we saw, which I'm just going to name it because, you know, what the hell, they were dead for years, was I Like Anime, and it was just called that, and it was just a bunch of kids talking about video games, and it was like one of the worst things I'd ever seen. I was just like, you know, yeah, so we can, like, that was kind of what pushed me forward, along with Clarissa's suggestion.
Hey, yeah, well, there's not many of us left. There's a few.
Yeah.
But not a lot. It's
all the eyeballs are on YouTube at this point.
Right.
Yeah.
Hey, that's where the quote unquote money is.
Yep. Well, unless
except
you're
it's not at all.
You're PewDiePie or you're no one else. So that's about it.
Right. But I laugh at the notion people are, hey, people make money doing that. No, two guys make money doing that.
Yeah.
No one else
makes
a lot
of money, and that's it.
Yeah. Like, anyway, last two questions from Petri via email. What were your favorite video games of last year?
Wow.
Daryl, let's start with you.
I'm going to say my top one is Metal Gear Rising Revengeance.
Ah.
Really, really good platinum action title. I'm a big fan of Metal Gear, and so, you know, writing-wise and such, it fits very well in with that whole Metal Gear stuff, which, hey, I've been a nerd for that for quite some time. You know, really solid stuff. One of the greatest final boss battles in a video game I have ever seen in my life. It's you cannot be spoiled on it, except it is the most spoiled thing about that game. I greatly recommend it. It got re-released on Steam in like a complete edition, and it runs flawlessly on a PC if you just plug in an Xbox controller or whatever. Really good stuff. There are other games, and but instead of rifling off a list of 20 things, that's going to be my one pick.
I guess... Oh, Clarissa, do you have one?
I'm trying to remember if I actually played anything that came out last
year.
Because I'm so far behind. Like, I own so many video games that I have not played yet.
Well, I'll go. The game that I think, I mean, Metal Gear Rising is great, but to be different, this one, you know, had a great emotional impact for me. I really liked Gone Home. I really, really enjoy games that try something different.
Video game, dude.
First you tell us visual novels aren't a game, and now you're telling us Gone Home is? I'm so confused.
I thought you were going to be different and say The Wonderful 101.
Ah, that's a damn good game, too. That is one nobody played. But I haven't finished Wonderful 101. That's the only reason. That would probably be up there. So, and the thing is I don't typically play games very quickly, because I don't have a lot of money, and video games are expensive, and so I'll typically wait for a Steam sale, and then, I mean, one of the games I'm playing currently is Driver San Francisco, which came out in, like, 2012. So, but yeah, I'll go with Gone Home.
Yeah, Gone Home was really good.
Let's see here. And the final question, which I think is a good one to end on, do you think writing an anime has holistically improved over the decades?
That's very difficult to answer because a lot of the really crappy stuff in the years past, we just never saw it.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Now that we get absolutely everything, we see absolutely everything. So it's, you know.
I would argue that it really hasn't changed all that much because, I mean, there's still, I mean, granted, back in the 70s, there was never a show as sophisticated as Standalone Complex. Like, there's...
Right.
Like, that was never written. That would never have been written back in the 70s in anime.
Right.
So I have to say that from that level, it has improved. Because those things will get greenlit, and they wouldn't normally. Things like, you know, Watamote and such, again, that's just a show you wouldn't have seen even in the 80s. That's not a show you would have seen. But I mean, there's still plenty of just formulaic stuff. Like, there will always be. So
Yeah, I don't know. I think I'm kind of with Gerald. Like, I think that there's a certain amount of progression in that you see more variety tracking from, like, the very beginnings to later on. More things that are made for not just for kids and trying to tell some more ambitious story. So to a certain extent, yes. I don't know that that's necessarily consistent because, you know, economic concerns and audience demographics and so on and so forth mean that it's kind of up and down in terms of the kind of ambitious or complicated projects that do or don't get greenlit. But
yeah, we have heard a lot lately about people saying, oh, they'd like to make more things like this, but the reality is the demographics of who's purchasing anime things
right. Means
that you can't make this kind of stuff anymore, or it's harder to get the funding and backing for it. So it's one of those cases where right now, and it's been the case for the last several years at this point, there's really only two audiences for anime, either very young children or like super otaku, and very little of that like in between segment, because they'll only maybe make Studio Ghibli movies kind of that reach beyond that crowd. And so if you want to try and make a thing that's like, you know, an action piece for adults, you'll get one once every couple of years, but you won't get like a lot of them. Like, I was actually surprised that we got not only within relatively short succession Black Lagoon, but then Jormungand shortly afterwards, and maybe we wouldn't have gotten one without the other. But it's in some ways, some of that stuff seems like it's fewer and farther between because of the amount of anime that's being produced now being so much more than it ever was. That is definitely a change. It wasn't a case, you know, even years ago where there was 40 some shows a season as the norm like it is now.
Yeah.
And so the fact that the total amount of shows has skyrocketed while the total amount of shows that are good and worth checking out has stayed relatively the same sort of makes people think like, oh, it's declined if you look at it from one side. But if you look at the numbers another way, you could say, oh, well, it stayed relatively the same because it's still the same amount of good stuff. It's just seeing hard more to find. That.
Yeah, it's just harder to find, I suppose. It's just there's no filter there anymore.
Yeah, really hard to just organically find something that's cool that people aren't like talking about already.
And I think in some ways, too, just the translation shift makes it difficult to assess some types of things about the writing. Like, if I tried to think, well, has writing like dialogue writing improved in anime over the course of the time? Well, if you're not fluent in Japanese, which I'm not, I don't really know that I could make a comment about that.
Well,
I would argue,
I would argue that it has because Yoshiyuki Tomino is making fewer shows. So therefore his terrible dialogue is somewhat less present.
That is true.
Okay. All right. Well, I think that about wraps us up. Big thanks to you guys for coming on by the show. That was a whole lot of questions, and I'm happy that you were able to stick around and actually get to all of them.
No problem. We don't have lives. Also, we're used to recording this long on our own show as a matter of course.
Right.
Yeah, we would have probably gone another hour or two. So.
All right, well, you can find your show, people can find your show at AnimeWorldOrder.com.
Yep.
And once again, guys.
Follow us on Twitter at AnimeWorldOrder. And, you know, get all our personal accounts from that, since Anime World Order's Twitter account is just to say, hey, there's a new show. So it's not a post all that often on the Anime World Order Twitter. But I'm at Daryl Surratt.
I'm at Clarissa G.
And Gerald _AWO.
Why do you got to make things so difficult with the special characters?
Yeah, I know. I went through a couple of different iterations of it.
Okay. All right, guys. Thanks a lot. Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Daryl, Gerald, and Clarissa for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating or review. We really appreciate it. And we'll see you all next week.